The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Good morning, afternoon. Good morning, afternoon. I didn't think that I'd be seeing you so soon. Wasn't it just 11?
Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to some special Talking Simpsons bonus content. I am one of your hosts, the Jub-Jub lover, Bob Mackey. And who is here with me today, as always?
Henry Gilbert, a lover of Steven Universe and Jub-Jub. And this is an exciting bonus we have spinning right out of our recent Selma's Choice podcast.
Yes, if you can believe it, at times a Talking Simpsons episode can be too long. And we decided that we would offload some of the interview content with Rebecca Sugar into its own little bonus episode for you all to enjoy outside of the discussion about Selma's Choice.
Yes, we had so many questions about Rebecca's career and work on Steven Universe and all that. And if you listen to the podcast all the way, she even asked us, like, you know, cut it down. Like, even she was feeling like she was slightly self-conscious about how long it was. But we loved every second of it. But yes, we wanted to give people another chance to hear some of the extra stuff we chatted with Rebecca about, as well as, you know, to boost up again, to let people know they should really be checking out the brand new album of music she just released, Spiral Bound, which again is so good. Mm-hmm. And as she said, you know, on the main podcast too, you can find that on Spotify, on YouTube, on Bandcamp, on pretty much all places like officially that you can find music and give it a listen to. Like, it's 6 brand new songs, the first music she's written, you know, for herself and released ever. Like, she had a great story on the podcast saying, like, she'd been writing songs for cartoon characters to say, and now she is, you know, finally having herself say them and sing them. And it's really exciting to hear. And not only that, but Rebecca even let me know that we could plug in here a little bit of one of her songs, just in case you guys haven't heard it yet. So right here is the one I mentioned on the podcast that was one of my favorites on the album, Adams Morgan 1991. And maybe at the end you'll even hear a little bit of another one of my favorite songs from the album, Good Morning Afternoon. And remember, again, at Spotify, YouTube, most places you find music, check it out. Spiral Bound is the album.
And without further ado, here's a bit of Adams Morgan 1991 as we roll into the interview with Rebecca Sugar.
Blackberries growing on a chain link fence, cool breezes blowing through an open door, sidewalks are cracking in the midday sun. Morgan 1991, cold pizza waiting in the kitchen fridge, blue pilly carpet on an endless floor, warm light is streaming where the children run. Adams Morgan 1991.
Rebecca, and don't cry for me, I'm already dead. I was just rereading it again, and it's like, obviously, you know, it reminds me a lot of my own 20s. Like, I was a Jim or an Alan, I think. Me and Bob are a Jim and Alan, I'd say. And Bob better cry at my deathbed, too. Okay.
It's going to happen. I promise on this very podcast, it will happen. Well, now we're just saying Henry's going to die first, and I'm uncomfortable with that.
Yeah. No. but also, I think my favorite great use of a Simpsons reference in it was when Alan is Jim's best man at his wedding, and he is quoting what Abe says to Homer about time travel that he did say at his wedding in Treehouse 5. And I was like, oh, that is such like a great like layered reference.
That was the one that's a Twilight Zone reference, but it's in The Simpsons. That's the one that I was called out for as being like, that's not really from The Simpsons. But yeah, I thought that. I
mean, it's very well observed, Rebecca, because my wife and I have Simpsons references inside of our wedding ring. We have the words good waffles inside of our wedding rings.
That's
you can't
so
see it on
beautiful.
Camera, But just because we love that scene so much, we love that joke so much, and we're going to stick together. That's what good waffles do.
That's, I love that. That's the thing that I really wanted to be at the heart of that was, you know, I feel like when, this is something I've also realized kind of over the last decade too, is like watching things together, it just is my family's love language. And I think that that has kind of laid the foundation for my relationship with all of my friends and my romantic relationship. It's, you know, we connect over pop culture, media, animation, and The Simpsons so much when I was younger. And what I really wanted to do with that comic was just talk about how, if, you know, if that's your way of connecting with someone, that's legitimate, that's beautiful, and that's incredible, and that, and maybe that's, I don't know. I was frustrated at the time, and I continue to be, about how it's somehow seen, you know, as sort of silly if that's the thing that you're connecting over. You know, I wanted to show that that would be as real. I was reading a lot of, like, I read a lot of Oliver Sacks and stuff too. You know, it's like, oh, people will retain music in their minds sometimes when they lose everything else. And it's like, you know, when you have these deep memories and deep connections over a piece of media, you know, it becomes a part of your life and it becomes real. And as I was making a TV show, I really wanted to keep that in mind the whole time, that, you know, I hope that this can, and the power of it isn't so much what we were making, but the fact that it could become part of someone's life and part of their relationships and something that you can connect over. To me, that's where all this power and beauty is. And I wanted to explore that. I think I went a little hard back then in terms of the, this is dark. I'm sorry.
That's what makes it so memorable. I mean, while watching this episode for research, I did think of your comic, Rebecca, the Don't Cry For Me, I'm Already Dead comic, because just the tiniest things are the things my wife and I will repeat to each other from The Simpsons. And I forgot it was in this episode where my wife, she wears a hat most of the time when she goes out. And often she'll, like, leave it sitting behind on a chair or, you know, on a table at a restaurant. And I will repeat the guy saying, "Forgot my hat," when she forgets her hat.
Right.
So right. It happens maybe funeral. Like once every 2 months. And then I remember, like, I say, "Forgot my hat," and I forgot it's in this episode. It's just a random guy. I don't know why that stuck in my head, but it did.
This episode is full of a lot of quotable lines. I think "I am the Lizard Queen" is one of the most quotable from this episode to me that stands out. But there's so many good. The lines from Surly at Duff Gardens.
All
are,
the Surly lines, yeah.
Everyone transcends.
I wasn't like taping all of these episodes like Henry was. I couldn't get blank tapes that easily, so there were huge gaps. But this is one I definitely rewatched a lot as a kid, and I loved as a kid. And watching it as an adult, I'm just wondering, why did I like it so much? Is it just the 5 minutes of theme park stuff? And maybe that was it. But I realized, I don't know, 17 minutes of this show are about Selma and coming to terms with aging as a woman and, you know, wanting to have a family and things like the things that a 10-year-old at the time, 10-year-old boy can't really come to grips with or understand.
Oh yeah, I didn't retain any, like, when I was returning to this, I was like, oh, they're right, the Duff Gardens episode. Lisa drinks the water. That's what I wrote. Lisa drinks the water. Lizard Queen.
Homer eats a sandwich.
Yes. I remembered Homer's sandwich, but I forgot that was also in this, which I think is kind of funny that there's two pale, hallucinating, sick people in one episode. True. It's like, that's a little bit of a double beat, but different reasons, so... suppose it's all right. Oh, to what were you saying previously? I forget where I read it, but wasn't the thing that James L. Brooks, like, always wanted a Marge episodes?
Yes, yeah. He apparently, it was easy to sell a Marge pitch if you had it, because often, you know, everybody comes in with pitches and it's like Homer does a crazy thing usually, and you all have Homer stuff. But if you say, like, Marge does something, or Marge has an even better for the sisters, that actually, like, usually James L. Brooks, who is the final say on whether you do an episode or not, at least back then, he would really buy into a pitch from a woman's perspective, which totally makes sense. Like, because Brooks, you know, he won Oscars based on his writing for women and the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Like, he was very into telling stories of women in his stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And also conversely, there was a trend around this time on the show where new writers were kind of punished, in quotes, by having to write Marge episodes because they were the hardest. That's why Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein, their first episodes are Marge Gets a Job and Marge in Chains, because it was easy to write Homer and I guess easy to write Bart, but they were all a group of middle-aged men, and they weren't as into writing Marge lines as the driving force of a story.
Right.
Well, it's funny too, listeners would have just heard it, but I was just thinking about this with, we're preparing for Marge versus the Monorail as we record this, and it's called Marge versus the Monorail, and, you know, framed as Marge discovers the secret of the monorail, and then in Act 3 Homer just steals it and he saves the day, and, like, Marge doesn't really do anything.
And actually, right. Yeah, That was Conan's second episode for the show.
Right. That one feels really Conan O'Brien-y to me.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, maybe that was his final extra push on it of just like, oh, and Marge, she's the one who saves the day. And then they sneak in Act Three. It's like, actually, Homer saves the day. It's
right. Not, no. Oh, man. That one's eternal.
It's all, well, yeah, Rebecca, too. Do you guys, you know, this era of The Simpsons really has a lot of like changing dialogue at the last minute and re-editing mouth movements to fit a new line. Like, how often did you guys change dialogue like late after, like, you know, say after it comes back from overseas animation?
We would do it if we really needed to. We could make a new scene. We could do it. We could create an entirely new scene with retakes and slip it in. We definitely added a lot of, I mean, it was always a godsend when you'd have a scene with the back of someone's head because it meant that you could ADR. And yes, we would I'm very particular as an animator, like if we did get an ADR line, you know, we could go in and manipulate the lip sync to try and get it to look, to try to get it to match because we'd be in the edit bay slipping the line in. We didn't do it a huge amount. And usually when we did, it would be for clarity. It wouldn't be for punch up. If we're watching this thing down and we're just like, oh, you know, we totally forgot to mention this thing you need to know within this episode, especially about, you know, lore or characters. Or I'm trying to think of some of the times that we would do it. But yeah, it's wild going back to Simpsons because they, you know, the writers would be involved up until the last second, and so you'd see a lot of ADR jokes and the fact that the lip sync won't hook up. It's like it's fun to just wonder, oh, what was this going to be? I didn't spot that when I was young. There's the whole Frogert exchange, which is a big part of Don't Cry. When I went back to see that, I was like, oh, this scene is a Frankenstein. This I think they just fabricated this entire thing. You know, stuff looks like it's like played and then extended, and some things are like reversed, and you know, mouths are being manipulated. You know, I didn't know how to see that when I was younger, but now I like being able to see how these things are kind of collaged together. Yeah.
Well, it's something in HD too that you can really, it's easier to tell because they edited it on VHS back then, unlike today's editing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We could get really particular. I mean, we could isolate mouths and hold other parts of the body. And we did like a lot of our camera shakes in post and gels for different, well, we had a After Effects department as well, which only later on in the show we campaigned for years and years to have an effects department because we did it really traditionally. I mean, we would like, if you needed a certain time of day, like you couldn't just throw a color on something, like you'd have to build every palette for everything, every prop and every character had to be in a certain lighting, and then you'd send all those blueprints to the studio. So yeah, but we definitely had some flexibility for like holding mouths and changing that.
But you guys wouldn't have references to, like, you know, say a pop culture figure who might die before the episode come out. That wasn't a danger for you guys.
You know what happened once? That was kind of like this. Oh my gosh. I'm like, should I even tell this story? There's a scene in an episode right after Steven finds out about Pink Diamond where he's talking to Amethyst and he's sitting in the pizza parlor and he's kind of folding all of his pizza toppings into a napkin and tying them as he's nervously talking about all these different aspects of his mother. And he had a line where he was talking about how he could see how she was good and bad to both sides. And it was exactly when there was a both sides comment from Trump, like weeks before we were finalizing this episode, where just even saying the words both sides was just so upsetting. And we cut it. We changed the line at the last second. I'd say that's probably the closest thing. It wasn't a pop culture reference, but it was just like, no, like that's not what we're trying to do here. You know, and similarly, I think, you know, we did the whole Gem Harvest episode, which was completely recontextualized when it came out weeks after, because at the time that we made it, it was like, oh, Uncle Andy is completely stuck in the past. Like this, people don't agree with this way of thinking anymore, and he needs to realize that, and he needs to sort of join all of us in the present. And it was just like, the second it came out, it was like, this doesn't mean this at all anymore. And, you know, trying to figure out right before it comes out, I know how to really clarify what that was,
because that episode aired Thanksgiving 2016.
Yes.
Which was a very fraught time that you couldn't have anticipated.
No, because we're writing it a year before, you know, and at the time we were writing it, it was like, what a lonely person, you know, nobody agrees with him. I mean, it's just so different. I mean, it also, you know, obviously it was real as well, and it was something that we were, and so much of the show, you know, were about things and kinds of people that we had experienced, and you know, these things were all real. But that was just not, the conversation was not active in that particular way when we were writing, if you know what I mean. And so So yes, in that case, yeah, there were times where at the very last second, because usually because of just a conversation that was suddenly emerging, and we could finesse the lines a little bit to just make sure that that our stance was actually clear and that we weren't trying to make a reference to something that had just been that had just become a big point of discussion.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know if you want to include that. That's like neither here nor there. But yes, we would have to jump in and do that sometimes.
I do like. It's funny how or interesting how like after a few months pass, you might even forget that somebody said something similar, because I was looking back at my original notes for this episode. We covered it originally in November of 2016 at the end. So similar story. And in my notes, I don't even know what this is a reference to. We get to the end of the episode and we're going to talk about Murphy Brown. But in my notes, I have compared to Trump getting mad over Hamilton. And I'm like, I have no idea what that means.
Oh my gosh, right.
It's 7+ years later. I have no idea what that means, but I know, I'm sure everyone was talking about it when that episode went live. But I forget what, I mean, I know Mike Pence went to a Hamilton thing and maybe the cast talked to him. I have no idea, again. But it's weird how much these things occupy our brains. Oh, go ahead.
Right, they all stood and they protested. I vaguely remember. Yeah. So I think you really have to remember. It's like you look at those words and you're like, oh yeah, that's something like what I imagined happened must have happened. But yeah, I think I remember that.
Yeah, that's great. So we covered this when that Jim Harvest episode aired.
Yeah, apparently this the last time we did this was funny. November 30th, 2016.
Selma's Choice.
Yes, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Wild.
Now, also, there's another great bit on the commentary of Groening pointing out that, like, oh, there's another, that kid, there's a foreground or background character that just is Bart that they drew in there, which is much more of a season one kind of deal. And yeah, I mean, Rebecca, you guys were pretty watchful over your background characters, right?
Yeah, we had a lot of go-to extras. I mean, we kind of designed a cast of, especially of boardwalk boardies, who we would always return to. Be like, mushroom shirt guy is there. Yes, like a lot of them were crew members as well. Like when I remember we had an issue when there's a party that Kevin is throwing in an episode later, and we put a lot of the Steven crew at the party, but we had to take people's glasses off because like I'd say 98% of us wore glasses, and when you looked at this shot, it's just like everyone has glasses. It's like quite samey, so we had to modify some of our self inserts there.
Was this a nerd party that Kevin's throwing here?
but yeah, and they all had their different little names. But yeah, it's crowds are tough. It's tough. It's funny. I've been rewatching a lot of old Looney Tunes with Ian, and looking at those old cartoons, it's like there's like two characters on screen at a time. It's like they just don't do crowds, and when there are crowds, it's just like shapes of paint and sound effects, because crowds are really, really hard, and then you know, doing them for television, you know, that's challenging. And to do a shot with like 16 characters in it, and to do a shot with one character in it, like nobody, there's no, the pay is the same, there's no extra time, you know, it's just really punishing to do. So yeah, it makes sense. You gotta find a way to reuse whatever you can with characters too. Also with locations, we were always trying to find ways to do clever reuse. There's this story because we would use all the time the stage that they would set up on the beach, and we'd find different ways to repurpose it. It's like there's a concert or there's like a political debate, and it's like we would always get to use the stage and the stage, and then the same crowd. You know, it's like these are the people that live here. They're showing up at the concert, or they're using the same stage. And then one year they actually made that stage for Comic-Con, so you could go up and do karaoke on it and stuff. And I was talking to the Steven Universe writers, Ben and Matt, who went on to create Craig of the Creek. We would do it at the writing stage. We'd be like, we have to figure out a way to reuse these characters or reuse this location. We walked into Comic-Con and they saw the stage, and Ben said his first thought was like, oh good, reuse. Like, they didn't have to build this thing from the ground. It's like they had to build this from the ground up. There's nothing that was economical about doing that, but it's just like, it's such an impulse. Like, yes, we can use this again. We can use this place again. We can use mushroom shirt guy again. It's like, just, yeah, we have it. So yeah, it makes sense. It's like, yeah, sometimes you just have to throw an extra Bart in there, you know.
Sometimes an extra Bart shows up. I mean, Matt Groening, I mean, he's not an animator, of course, but he would tell the animators or the director, make it like Dumbo, put the crowd in the dark, less detail that way. The problem is, the show had too many riots during the day in Springfield.
Yes.
You couldn't riots. Always have a crowd politely sitting in the dark.
Yes.
Schoolyard graffiti of the Scooby Gang. Wild secret garden with the chlorine pool. Long row house shadows when the day is done. Adams Morgan, 1991. Long children's day is done. Adams Morgan, 1991.